Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinny Eastwood Show. It's on AmericanFreedomRadio.com and check out the archives there. Bear in mind, this is a listener-supported network and a listener-supported show. So go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and the VinnyEastwoodShow.com respectively and start donating a dollar or more a month today. Because think about it, ladies and gentlemen, we give it to you all commercial-free. We're not annoying, are we? And we give you the archives for free as well. That's not annoying, is it? We make sure that your life is as free from the annoyance of your slave existence as humanly freaking possible. Now, speaking of our slave existence, the big, big terrorism attack of 9/11, and I use the word terrorism operatively, meaning it's a form of governance whereby you shock and terrorize your own citizenry into getting them to do what you want them to do. And it seems to me, and a recent article that seems to have come out to confirm this, that Americans in particular, but to a lesser extent the entire world, are suffering from a form of post-traumatic stress. In many cases, complex post-traumatic stress. What does that mean? Well, it means that you're dealing with a global population who are so traumatized from such an event that their behavior will be modified instantaneously to make them try their hardest to avoid that trauma and avoid looking into it. All right? You see how that works? You understand how difficult 9/11 truth has been to put out there to a population suffering from that kind of subset of disorders? Good luck, buddy, they say. Hey, but people do come out and people are waking up. Thanks in no small part to my guest. Richard Gage is a San Francisco architect, worked for 28 years and used to earn over $100K a year, used to vote Republican, and now he's touring the world, having phone books thrown at him by angry crowd members of the Jewish Mafia. So Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth is the organization that he does a lot of speaking for, and he's been traveling all around the world. He's come to New Zealand, to Auckland and Wellington, where he spoke at Te Papa to a really, really great audience. And he is presenting in mostly the presentation, The Architecture of Destruction. We're looking, just as an architect or an engineer would, at how the towers came down. Was it a controlled demolition or was it two planes? No? Right. Okay. Now, Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Vinny.
I want you to give me your rap on just the recent, not talking necessarily about 9/11, but talking about the post 9/11 world as you currently live in it, and considering the evidence you know about Muslim extremists involved on 9/11, whether or not there were any, and the current Muslim ban and all of the political ramifications around that. I mean, are the American people being told to be afraid of the right people here?
Well, it all goes back to the evidence, and that's where I start, Vinny, because you look at the actual evidence for the destruction of all three of these World Trade Center skyscrapers on 9/11, and that's what we've been doing for 10 years with Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth. We now have 2,800 architects and engineers calling for a new investigation of this destruction. I mean, if 2,800 architects and engineers told you that your house was in danger of collapse, would you listen to them? Think about this. This is an extraordinary number of people staking their reputations, putting them on the line for and with nothing to gain. People call people names who speak unpopular truths, and we're accustomed to that, but we keep on keeping on. We've given more than about 600 presentations now in more than 40 countries and more than 90 American cities to groups of 100 to 4,000. And we always get a show of hands, usually 90 to 95% say, yeah, we got to have a new investigation. Absolutely. After looking at this evidence, most people are completely unaware, for instance, that there was a third tower that came down on 9/11. And it's like, what? What world am I living in? This alternate reality. And so I always start people off with the truth about what happened. And this is actually acknowledged, you know, by the media once you get them talking about it, but they don't talk much about it. Government doesn't talk much about it. Architects and engineers are mostly unaware of the third worst structural failure in modern history, this 47-story skyscraper on 9/11 in the afternoon. After the Twin Towers came down, about 7 hours later, this high-rise, steel frame high-rise, drops like a rock straight down suddenly, symmetrically, in under 7 seconds. This is, of course, in the exact manner of a classic controlled demolition. So we know, just looking at it, once architects actually see it, we go to the conferences and we encourage them to actually look at this video and tell me what you're looking at. They all say controlled demolition, of course. Well, did you know that NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology, who is tasked by Congress to explain all three collapses to the American people, claimed seven years later, when the official report came out about this building after everybody kind of forgotten about it, that it came down by normal office fires. Now, normal office fires have never, or any office fire, has never brought down a skyscraper at any speed, much less in under 7 seconds, after witnesses hear explosions. With the FEMA, Federal Emergency Management Association, giving the initial report that came out in May of 2002, which NIST took over and came out with their official report like 5 years after that. But the original report by FEMA documents in an in-depth metallurgical analysis of the few pieces of steel that were saved, because the rest of them were shipped to China for recycling before investigators could get their hands on it and analyze what happened to this steel frame structure. Well, this is the illegal destruction of evidence in a crime scene. But the few pieces of steel, they have documented hot sulfur corrosion attack on the steel, molten iron, and partially evaporated the ends of these beams, says Jonathan Barnett, who authored part of this FEMA report and metallurgical analysis. So here we have the evidence of incendiaries. Thermite is an incendiary used by the military to cut through steel like a hot knife through butter. And this is the evidence of not just ordinary thermite, which produces molten iron at 4,000 degrees, but the evidence of thermate, a very special form of thermite, where sulfur is added. So this is the explanation of the presence of sulfur, which is the deepest mystery, according to the New York Times, found in the debris pile.
The very small debris pile for the 100-story buildings that were just like not there anymore.
Well, we get over to the Twin Towers and we do have 110 stories, and yes, that you'd expect a pile of 110 concrete floors at the bottom of these, you know, stacked up 20, 30 stories tall. But no, we don't have one, not 50, not 10, not even one acre in size concrete floors at all. The concrete is not found down below. There's only a two-story pile of core columns and perimeter columns. The rest of these columns are distributed around a 12 or 1,400 square foot diameter, a 12 or 1,400 foot diameter area.
Yeah.
And the concrete is pulverized in midair to 100 micron particles, spread like a blanket throughout all of lower Manhattan. It's incredible.
And it was full of asbestos too, and a hell of a lot of health problems have come out of lower Manhattan and a whole lot of the first responders who were stuck in that stuff.
None of which would be there if these buildings were not explosively blown up. And that's exactly what the videos show. Because we're told, you know, that this 15-story section in the case of the North Tower, above the point of jet plane impacts, we're told that due to structural weakening by fire, the columns gave way, and this top portion drove the rest of the building down to the ground and then destroyed itself. Now, all this happens in under a dozen seconds, and that's just ludicrous because the top portion of the building is the lightest. It's like a Volkswagen crushing a Mack truck. It just doesn't happen because there's an equal and opposite destructive force, according to Newton's third law of motion. You can't have the upper lightest part destroying the whole intact, cold, hard steel below as if it weren't even there, especially 100,000 tons of structural steel.
Yeah, it'd
it
be
just
like
could never happen.
If you were standing still and somebody cut off your blade with like a really sharp sword, right? And the weight of your head pulverized your body on the way down, right? There is like that level of stupidity.
Exactly. Or tree, you know, the top part of a tree crushing the rest of the trunk after it somehow begins a break up above. No, it's going to fall off. And that's exactly what you have in the case of the South Tower. It actually begins to fall off. But then you have asymmetrical damage from the airplanes and asymmetrical damage from the fires and asymmetrical loading from this top part in the South Tower, the 30 stories above the point of jet plane impacts in that building, that are starting to fall over. But then it drives straight down, well, it disintegrates first, but then the destruction goes straight down symmetrically, like these firefighters describe, dozens of them, like a belt. All these explosions going all the way around the building. They talk about these explosions. I mean, dozens and dozens of witnesses of explosions.
Well, you're just breaking up there just for a second, Richard, and I want to actually illustrate some of the things that you've pointed out there. So the tower tilted. The tower tilted.
The official.
And then as it fell, it basically got turned into atomized dust, right, before it even hit the ground, before you even see it start to really fall. And on top of that, you've got all these firefighters going, yeah, and then we came down to the bottom floor, and there was another heavy-duty explosion, and the guy's like blood running down his face and stuff like that. Yeah, man, and we were moving out that way, right? And then there were like three big explosions, like boom, boom, boom. And Willie Ramirez, I think it was, who was working in the as a janitor in the basement.
Willie Rodriguez.
Yeah. He said there was an explosion so hard that it pushed us upward, you know, and we were in the basement. It's just like, whoa, holy hell. There's anywhere you look, if you look at the 9/11 official story, there's nothing holding it up. Just like, apparently, nothing was holding up the towers, you know. It's just like, no, put them together with popsicle sticks and super glue, bro. You know, that's just what happens.
Well, that's what they claim, that it was shoddy construction. But even NIST says that the buildings were robustly engineered. So they don't fault the engineering of the building at all. What they fault is the lightweight steel trusses having been the fireproofing having been knocked off of them by the impact of the airplanes, which is not proven, nor is the subsequent hypothesis or speculation that the floor trusses sagged under because of the fires underneath them, and then that pulled in the perimeter columns, and that's what caused the columns to break. But what the videos clearly show is the antenna, huge antenna on top of the North Tower. It falls more than 10 feet prior to the perimeter of the building descending, which indicates, because it's sitting over the core columns of the beam of the building, that the core columns are what actually gave way first, which then pulled in on the floor trusses, which would have then caused the inward bowing of the perimeter structural steel columns, and then caused them to fail. So that's a completely different hypothesis than NIST claims, which proves that the core columns were taken out first, and that below the level of the jet plane impacts. So we've and that's what the evidence proves. The pools of molten iron found in the debris pile, flowing like lava, says the first responders in one of these dozens of
quotes. It was like you were in a foundry.
Yeah, exactly. That's the quote there, and it's extraordinary. And there's even Leslie Robertson, the structural engineer who designed the towers, is a witness of the molten iron. He calls it molten steel, as do the others, because they can't really tell the difference. But tests later prove that it's molten iron, including tests by FEMA.
And that guy, the designer of the towers himself, said it was designed to take the impact of an airliner, even two or three. He said that the damage of the impact from a jet plane full of fuel would be like putting a pencil through a mosquito net and doing that much damage to the overall structure.
Oh, yeah. These are highly redundant structures. The exterior is a Varandale truss with vertical 14-inch square steel tube columns tied together with horizontal 1-inch steel spandrel panels. This is an amazing exterior structure. There's been nothing like it before or since the Twin Towers. And that's exactly true. The forces routed themselves around the hole in the building made by the plane.
So think about that, ladies and gentlemen. If somebody, like, I don't know, puts a pencil through your mosquito net will turn into atomized dust. All right, that's the logic.
Yeah, just about. It's pretty incredible. Both of these towers, all three of these towers, descended at near free fall acceleration, as fast as a bowling ball falling out of the sky. Now, that's through more than 200 and I forget how many columns, a huge number of structural steel columns. The building's going faster and faster. The steel is not even slowing down the rate of descent. So they must have been removed. Well, the only thing that can do that is cutter charges. And we appear to have the evidence, well, we clearly have the evidence of explosive cutter charges and incendiary cutter charges as well. Incendiaries work by means of heat. That's what thermite is.
And by evidence of this, you're talking about the photos that came out after 9/11 of some of the remaining support struts that were there in Ground Zero that had perfect 45-degree cuts across them with melted iron coming down, like dripping down off the cuts.
Absolutely. This is a directly indicative of a controlled demolition. That's what they do, because you don't cut the columns horizontally, because they'll just kind of stay there in an awkward fashion. The building will start to tip over. You do it at a 45, and then you apply, even then, a kicker charge to knock the columns off of the piece below that they've been cut from.
So if you've got two things that are stuck together, the only way to really get them not stuck together, considering they're connected on so many ways, is to cut a wave right between them and then set off an explosion to force them apart.
Yeah. All right. And yeah, you have to do this, there are plenty of columns.
And you have to do this many, 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 many times to take out even a moderate-sized building, let alone, like, virtually the largest buildings in the world, right? How many times would you have to do that? Which leads me on to the stories of these unbadged work crews in white coveralls that were visiting the towers, dragging cables and stuff all throughout the hallways. Everybody's like, what the hell are these guys doing? And they're like, oh, we're just upgrading the internet, you know, that kind of thing. And it's like, well, where are your name tags? Where are your security badges? How come you don't have any corporate insignias on your white coveralls, bro? Like, why are there so many of you? And why are you all coming down all the elevator shafts and all of that kind of stuff? Oh, no, we're just doing our job. Oh, okay, that's all right. No questions.
Well, we certainly want an investigation of the security company under whose noses all these people would have had to have
now by
been,
chance was that
and
was that security well, company by chance run by the brother of the then president George W. Bush, Jeb Bush, until the day of 9/11?
Yeah, that was Securicom Stratasec, and we're talking about dozens and dozens of tons of thermite and nanothermite that we need investigation of. I mean, there was an elevator modernization who had the ACE elevator actually had this contract with 85 employees in the towers at the time that they were hit by the planes, and they were working on this largest elevator modernization in the world at the time here, and they fled when the planes hit the towers. This was quite a scandal, actually, documented in USA Today in October of 2001. So we certainly want an investigation of ACE Elevator, Securicom, Stratasec, the security company, that is. And, and even everybody on the board of that company whom you just mentioned. This is really important stuff. Of course, AE 9/11 Truth. We are technical building professionals. We're not criminal investigators or journalists. This is an investigation that really requires the will of a body of people who are not compromised, justice officials who are willing to follow the evidence wherever it leads. And some of it leads in damning places. For instance, a small team of scientists led by Niels Harrit in Copenhagen and Stephen Jones in the U.S., they document throughout all the World Trade Center dust these red-gray chips, red on one side, gray on the other. They are ubiquitous. They're everywhere. They thought they were paint, because it kind of looks like paint. It's dual-layered. But they zoom in and do an electron microscope analysis, XEDS, actually, X-ray energy dispersive spectroscopy. They find that these chips have the ingredients of thermite, iron oxide, and aluminum powder, mainly. But this is fascinating. So they zoom in 50,000 times into these chips that they find in all the dust samples, independently collected, eight of them altogether. And these red-gray chips, they put them in a differential scanning calorimeter, and they ignite at 420 degrees centigrade, about 800-900 degrees Fahrenheit. And when they do, they produce what? Iron microspheres. Previously molten iron microspheres.
Strange coincidence here, because downtown Denver also lights up at 420. Because they just legalized weed.
I see. That's pretty funny. the more interesting to me, and perhaps your listeners, I don't know, is the reality that the U.S. Geological Survey and R.J. Lee doing toxicological studies and all this dust throughout the lower Manhattan finds billions and billions of these same previously molten iron microspheres. So here, independent studies by officials find this curious, unexplained iron microspheres, and yet they can't explain where they came from, but they're so ubiquitous that they basically say it's a signature component of this dust. It's not even World Trade Center dust unless it has all these spheres, but they have no idea where they came from. And yet here, these red-gray chips are put in a heater, and they produce the same exact spheres with the same signature as they tested. So we know exactly where those spheres came from. In fact, they're found attached to partially ignited red-gray chips in these samples as well. So we know exactly where they came from. So this is an internally consistent, self-corroborating set of experimental data that could put a lot of people away for a long time.
All right, so we're talking... Let's not talk about the speculations. Let's talk about who could actually get a hold of this technology, and that's military intelligence we're talking about.
It's highly advanced defense contracting manufacturers, at least. So we certainly need an investigation of who can make this stuff. It's called nanothermite or superthermite. It's been studied before 9/11. It was developed. It's pretty...
What do you mean?
Confidential stuff.
What do you mean it was developed, like by Skunk Works or something?
It was developed actually by NIST, interestingly enough, and Los Alamos.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and guess what? NIST brought in to control this investigation early on people from SAIC, a defense contractor like Foreman Williams. From that company, who himself was involved in the development of super thermites. So they could easily have found it. Of course, they weren't looking for it, apparently.
Either that or the people who could have found it were the very people who were actually picked to do the investigation and the and whatnot, because they know that if they find something, it's on them. So they choose not to find something. I think it was Mark Twain that once had a great saying. He says, a man will not be able to understand something if his income depends on him not understanding it.
Yes, exactly. I remember that quote.
So we talk about this this whole idea of coordination. So if you've got the was warned about in the 1940s by, I think it was Eisenhower, about the unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex. Now, a lot of people, these are new words. What's military-industrial complex? Well, basically, when World War II happened, you needed to create a whole bunch of tanks, planes, and drugs, and uniforms, and so on and so forth, all of a sudden, from the Depression to wartime in a flash. So an enormous amount of companies with an enormous amount of money flourished in that environment. And after the enormous threat of World War II was gone, those companies were still there and started to choose to manufacture threats and make people afraid of those threats so they could justify creating more wars and keeping in business, more or less.
Yeah, and this is one way to do it. It's called a false flag operation, and there have been dozens and dozens throughout history. In fact, almost every war has been started with such a false flag operation. The Vietnam War is a classic example with declassified material showing that the Gulf of Tonkin incident, which started that war, never even happened. It was fabricated in order to get us into that war.
And it was, interestingly enough, fabricated by the father of Jim Morrison from The Doors. And it turns out a lot of incredibly famous big bands at that time, their lead singers, often came from military intelligence families.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that correlation, but it is...
Well, it's let's say you've got a military-industrial complex that includes the media and the entertainment industry. Put your own people into the heads of it, and voila, you can control public consciousness.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the Doors. I enjoyed their music. As dark as it was, the Doors.
You're all a bunch of fucking slaves.
Was that from Jim Morrison?
Yeah. He said that at a concert once, and everybody got real pissed off with him.
Oh, well, he was telling a little bit of truth there, though, wasn't he?
Yeah. And apparently. And isn't it interesting that people who start telling the truth and stuff like that, they wound up dying in some cases, because the truth's a real hard thing to take, and a lot of people don't like taking it. And I found this great quote on one of my Facebook friends, Wall Today, from Banksy, the street artist from London. And he says, if you're feeling really tired of it all, find a way to rest. Don't find a way to quit. Because it just keeps going,
that's good,
doesn't it?
I have to remind myself about that, too. I've been at it 10 years, and, you know, we're making progress, but it is slow. We've now got a study being conducted by Professor Leroy Halsey, one of the top forensic structural engineers in the country, from the University of Alaska, who's conducting a two-year computerized finite element analysis of the World Trade Center 7 destruction to show what did or didn't happen to it. And our supporters are funding this incredible study that NIST said they were going to do, but didn't. They produced a very, very fraudulent computer analysis whose animated model looks nothing like the destruction of the World Trade Center Building 7. And so within 3 months or so, it will be done, and we will its results in a peer-reviewed study and marketing and press releases will go throughout the academic and professional communities. We expect it to wake up a whole bunch of sleeping architects and engineers, as we are doing also with our efforts at conventions, local and national architecture and engineering conventions. We show, as the professionals walk by, I myself, an architect with the American Institute of Architects, and joined by others, we have about 200 AIA members. We show the unsuspecting architects this collapse, and we say, what does that look like to you? And they say, oh, that's a controlled demolition. We go, well, yeah, we certainly agree. Did you know that happened on 9/11? You know, this Building 7 going down, there's about 11 videos showing how it came down. And they go, what? Yeah, there was a third tower. Did you know that? No, didn't know anything about it. Most of them say that. And it's amazing. I mean, this should have been the most studied failure because, you know, no plane hit this Building 7. It's about 300 feet from the North Tower. It shouldn't have gone down in 7 seconds. And they go, wow, this is unbelievable. So we get them to sign our petition, most of them, and a resolution, which we're putting before the 400 of the top architects in the country in management positions at the annual convention in Orlando at the end of April this year. And it'll be the third resolution we've had calling upon the AIA to call for a new investigation of the destruction of this tower based on this evidence for controlled demolition. And we got only 3% of the vote the first year, but we got 12% the next year, and we hope to get 20 or 30% this year. So it's on a good trajectory to waking up architects.
Well, mate, that's really, really good. Well, there's another thing I want to stay here and also stress to people who also want to spread the truth about 9/11, is that you won't wake people up right away. Okay, it takes several hours of looking through the evidence to, you know.
Sounds like you're speaking from personal experience there.
But somebody named Dr. Rima Labo, told me about this phenomenon called the seventh man. And the theory holds that if you have a very deep-rooted belief structure, like the government doesn't want to exterminate or enslave me, and somebody comes along and says something completely contrary to it, you'll instantly fob them off and no reaction whatsoever. The idea will dissipate into nothing. And same with the second guy, and the third guy, and the fourth guy. But by the time the seventh guy comes to you and says that same thing that was completely contrary to your current beliefs, all of a sudden the idea will stick more likely, and you will begin to then change those beliefs. Now, how that works in practicality is, if I go and see somebody and said 9/11 is an inside job, they say, nah, fuck off, Vinny, you're a conspiracy theorist. And then Richard goes up to them and says, you know, 9/11 was controlled demolition. Ah, fuck off, you're a conspiracy theorist. But by the time somebody else comes up and says it again, they might wake up to the truth. Right now, the key here is, ladies and gentlemen, play your part. All right? You see something, say something. But say the truth, you know? Don't just let it go by the wayside. Oh, they might judge me. They might think I'm doing anything. Look, if you tell the truth and you stand in the truth, it doesn't matter what arguments people have against you, because you're right and they're wrong. You're right and they're wrong. It's just that simple. I just had to get that out because it was something Bill Hicks said on a comedy sketch the year before he died. You're right, they're wrong. Get over it. Just accept it.
Because it can be a lonely rollout here for those of us who are aware that this evidence obviously leads to the conclusion that 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, Muslim hijackers or, you know, some shadowy group didn't sneak into the towers in the months before 9/11, probably, and plant thousands of cutter charges throughout the columns and beams in this
could
building.
Just see
and
it
the
now.
Other.
Allahu nanothermite! which means nanothermite is great in Arabic, by the way.
Cute. And Building 7, of course, which was occupied by the CIA, the IRS, the Department of Defense, the Securities and Exchange Commission. You know, these are highly secure operations. You're just not going to be sneaking in there like this without cooperation from security. Of course, we want an investigation of security. So we're not talking, to answer your original question of an hour ago, we're not talking about in all likelihood, Muslim hijackers. So the entire Muslim world, or a good percentage of it, has been vilified and laid to blame for the destruction of the Twin Towers, when it couldn't possibly have been them. They're patsies, these hijackers in flight schools who failed Cessna Flying School, are all of a sudden doing these incredible maneuvers on these airliners that most pilots say they couldn't even hit, for instance, a 200-foot-wide target at 500 or more miles an hour. That's like impossible. They just don't have that kind of accuracy. So these planes, the witnesses show, most of the witnesses show these planes were really military style aircraft or retrofitted with highly maneuverable apparatus. If you watch their incoming flights to the towers, they do these subtle, very quick adjustments that only, you know, something like almost like a fighter jet could accomplish. Airliners do not.
Now, there's a friend of mine, he once lived next to a really major airfield. I think it was in Wisconsin. And one night he goes out with his girlfriend. He doesn't know why he went out. But he just grabbed her and then just drove around. And they're driving next to this airfield, and they were seeing these, you know, big cargo planes lots of them, coming in and landing and then taking off, and another one coming in right after it and landing and then taking off. They were all on remote control, bro. And they were in perfect unison. And I was like, whoa, that's freaky, man. He's like, yeah, bro, like scared the hell out of me to see that kind of thing happening. And
how did he know they were remote control?
Because to have something like 10 to 20 pilots all operating huge cargo planes and doing loops and coming in tandem jumping and things like that into the airfield didn't make any sense why the pilots would be training to do that, because you can't have any purpose for that. You know, you come in, you land, and you take off, right? Maybe one plane at a time. It's too dangerous to have too many of them coming in one after the other, after the other, after the other, with maybe 3 to 4 plane lengths in between them, right?
Interesting. Yeah, yeah.
Now, in Operation Northwoods, which was declassified, this was a operation that JFK himself turned down. He said, no, CIA, you guys are crazy. You want to start terrorist campaigns in America. You want to hijack airliners and you want to blow them up over Cuban airspace. You want to remote control them into that Cuban airspace and then blow it up and then blame it on Cuba and then launch a war in there. No. I'm not going to send in troops to support your bear pigs. No, CIA, I'm not supporting it. Boom! Back into the left. Boom! Back into the left. Boom! Back into the left. That's how that works.
Yep. I gotcha. Yeah, this is JFK, of course. Yeah. And he also was challenging the Federal Reserve and as well as the CIA. I mean, he was the people's president. And now we know what happens to people's presidents. And I'm concerned about our current president, and because the establishment seems to be intent on destroying him. So the enemy of my enemy is my friend. That's the way I approach my relationship with the current president.
What was interesting is that quote was from a former Persian dictator who was beheaded by his own subjects.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You can't make this shit up, bro. What was I said on a show the other day? Some of the worst things in the world are usually things we're doing right now, and we don't even know that we're doing it.
Wow.
Yeah. And this comes down to this whole question. There's this fear and this divide and conquer sort of paradigm that's coming up to a hype now. I mean, I've been ignoring the news for a year, so I'm just speaking it like, I don't know, like a bystander in just what other people are talking about as they come into my life randomly. And it's fear of the Muslims, hate the Muslims, you know, like this kind of thing. It's like escalating right up. And I'm like, well, where's the justification for this? I mean, look, the initial justification is always and has always been 9/11, isn't it? You know, just hate them, you know, because they're enemies that you don't know nothing about, don't speak their language, aren't familiar with their culture or anything like that. So it'll be easy to learn how to hate them, all right, because you know nothing about them. Right? And that's the thing. It's so much easier to hate someone if you don't know them.
Yeah, it is. It's a problem. And the right falls into this, of course, more than the left. And yet, if the right knew, you know, that they could not have been responsible for 9/11, I think there'd be a lot of crow that would be eaten here by the right. I don't know what it is. We have to wake up, of course, the left and the right, and both are manipulated by these seemingly diametrically opposed forces, Democrats and Republicans, which are so closely associated, and the strings are pulled by those forces who brought us 9/11.
Well, in fact, there was another thing I wanted to talk about. Who's the country in the world that hates Arabs more than any other country in the world? Israel. Boom. Right there. And I was just thinking about, what was it? Zenith Shipping is an Israeli shipping company. They moved out of the World Trade Center, I think it was the week before 9/11, and they broke their lease. Right? Now, in your investigations, have you seen any indications of Israeli involvement? Now, there was one thing here, is that if you stand an Israeli and an Arab next to each other, they're actually quite difficult to tell apart, you know, unless they're wearing a traditional dress of some description. And when you're speaking Arabic or when you're speaking Yiddish, it actually appears very similar as well, because it actually came from a similar part of the world. And what one documentary I saw was telling me is that what a lot of the people on these alleged people on these hijacked airliners were talking about is what they perceived as to be Arab hijackers who were actually Israeli Mossad agents. Just a little thing. Yeah.
Well, so they heard these, but we don't know that that was actually going on the planes.
Yeah,
it was just going on, and somebody heard it over some media, like airwaves or radio or whatever.
Yeah, that kind of thing.
Telephone,
and then you have the van full of explosives with a Jewish guy inside it that was parked on a bridge real close to the thing on 9/11, and the three Israeli students who were jumping for joy and filming the whole thing taking place while the attacks were going on. There's a lot there. But again,
that's the urban moving systems. I think you're referring to there with there's five dancing Israelis who turn out to be Mossad agents. And then we're on TV saying, yeah, we were there to document the event. Oh, you mean you knew about it in advance?
Whoa. All right. So now think about this. What happened after 9/11? Who got taken out first? Afghanistan pipeline deal. What was it? Unocal, former advisor to Unocal, Hamid Karzai, became the new prime minister. And who was Unocal affiliated with? Arbusto Oil, which is owned by the Bin Ladens and the Bushes.
Yeah. Well, more interesting than that to me was just a kind of a shock, a wake-up call. 90% of the opium in the world, the heroin in the world, comes from opium from Afghanistan. And the Taliban had shut that flow down from about 2,800 metric tons to about 187 metric tons, virtually choking it off.
Which means 1% of global supply in 2001. And in 2002, after the U.S. invasion, they were producing 95% of the world's supply.
Well, and in Afghanistan, according to the UN numbers, the tonnage shot up from 187 to 3,600 metric tons per year, exceeding what the flow was before the Taliban came into power. And then today, it's more like six thousand metric tons. So it's just huge, astronomical jump, and heroin's flooding cities, inner city youth, because it's cheaper now, because there's more volume, and somebody's making a lot of money.
Well, CIA. The CIA has been running drugs for a very long time, ever since Iran-Contra, when it was discovered that they were importing entire plane loads of cocaine into the US, distributing it in the streets, mostly in the black neighborhoods, and that kind of thing. Why would they do that, though? Here's why. Off the books revenue streams. Do you have any effing idea how expensive assassins are? Bro, you need a three-man team to take out one guy, minimum. And they need to have $250,000 minimum. And this is in the 70s. I was talking with a former assassin. I forget his name now. It was on the show. And that was how he described it, right? If you want to take out somebody, it's pretty frickin' expensive. And if you want to slip that by the taxpayer and the Defense Department budgeteers, you need an off-the-books revenue stream. And the great thing about drugs being illegal is that forces the prices right up, and it means that transactions can only happen in cash, which is untraceable.
And it turns out from the UN numbers that the profits from this opium exceed the oil companies' profits all put together, all the oil companies. I mean, that's that gives you a sense of the scale of this operation. And with that, Vinny, my apologies that I have to actually run right now, unfortunately.
Oh, well, I can probably give people about 3 minutes of wrapping up on this subject here. So give me 2 seconds. I just need to check my clock on this one, because it's getting to, down to this time where you've got to go, and I understand that. So you can just hang up and go. Thank you very much, Richard Gage. His website, ladies and gentlemen, ae911truth.org. And make sure you donate and sign the petition, all right? There's 2,800 and architects and engineers that have signed it, and there's 21,000 ordinary people like you who have signed it. We want to get that up pretty high, don't we, Richard? But anyway, thank you very much for your time, and fare thee well. All right. You want to say some final words there, bro?
Thank you so much, Vinny. Thanks, everybody. Yeah, the DVD is actually on YouTube now for free. People can see it. It's 9/11 Explosive Evidence. Experts Speak Out.
All right, that's going to be a good one there. Thank you very much, Richard. Now, to wrap up this 9/11 subject, ladies and gentlemen, I want to go on to discuss some of the ramifications further on after Afghanistan, notably the Iraq War. Okay, 1 million people. Okay, do you have any idea how many people that is? No, you don't. Okay, we're going to do a little exercise here. Close your eyes for a second or whatever, but just imagine yourself, okay, your whole body, you know, your eyes, your mouth, your nose, your feet, your arms, your torso, and so on and so forth. Think about your place in the universe, you know, where you go around the days and all the families that you have and the friends and so on and all these different people that you associate with, you know, your loves, your fears, your dreams, your hopes, and so on and so forth. And just think about that as one feeling, just you. Now, double that. Imagine you're thinking about you and somebody else. It might be your partner, or it might be, you know, your kid or something like that. But again, think about their whole life and everything that they affect, everything that they are. And now think about 10,000 people. Whoa, you're getting big now, right? Think about 100,000 people. Think about 1 million people. All right, so now you start to get the idea of what 1 million people kind of feels like. Now, they're dead. All right? And they were all Iraqi. They're dead now. Because you didn't expose 9/11 as an inside job. How does that feel? They're dead. Their country got invaded illegally. And now they're dead. Think about that, ladies and gentlemen, when you tuck yourself in at night and tell yourself that you love your children and that you love your country. They're dead now, in part because of you, because of your taxation, and because of the scumbaggery of the government, and because you're afraid to speak out about it. They're dead. 1 million of them. Every hope, every dream, every fear, every time they've ever laughed, or had fun with their kids, is gone. All right? Country invaded, and now it's got a hell of a lot of depleted uranium munitions in it. Okay? And that means a quarter of their babies are now born with deformities. You know what the average question is when your baby's born in America or New Zealand or anything like that? What sex is it? Is it a boy or a girl? You know what they say in Iraq? Is it normal? That's real sad. All right. Just think about that, ladies and gentlemen, the next time you decide to say nothing when you could have said that 9/11 was an inside job. I'm Vinny Eastwood from The Vinny Eastwood Show. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question in Eastwood. Like, go ahead, make my news. And thank you very much for going to thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and subscribing to the PayPal and the Patreon and the Kiwi Bank if you happen to be a New Zealander listening to this, the best alternative radio coming out of this country in this day and age. Love you very much, everybody. Thanks very much for your time.